All right, so here I am in Visual Studio, and I have already installed the Service Fabric SDK onto my machine, and now I'm going to walk you through creating your first reliable service. To do that, I'm going to say File, New, Project, and because I have the Service Fabric SDK installed, when I select Cloud under Visual C Sharp, I have this option here for Service Fabric Application. So I'm just going to choose that, and I'll let it default to Application 2 for the name, and hit OK. So now it's asking me, what kind of service do I want inside my application type? And because we're talking about stateless services now, that's what I'll focus on. But while here, I'll briefly mention that the actor service I mentioned very briefly a moment ago, the stateless web API is really the same as a stateless service, but it has the web API integration into it. So you could easily use web API for creating RESTful services that listen on HTTP. The guest executables is really just some scaffolding in Visual Studio to give you some tooling support, but you're not creating something with our programming models there. And then I don't have ASP.NET Core RC2 installed, so this is an option to install that. So then I can build some services using ASP.NET Core. But right now we're going to go for stateless service. I'll just keep the default name here of stateless one and say OK. At this point, Visual Studio is spitting out a template for me that has a solution in it, and the solution is going to have two projects in it. And then I will open up the Solution Explorer when it's done, and I'll show you what it has actually produced, and we're going to walk through the files. All right, so here we are. If I open up the Solution Explorer and I pin it, open, slide that window a little bit, what we end up with is a solution that has two projects. The first project is the application project. This has no code in it. This is really a project that ends up creating the application manifest XML file. If I open this node, you'll see there's a services entry in the tree. And if I open the services entry, you'll see one entry here for stateless one. So this is where you put what services you want to package up inside your application type. You can right-click on services here, and you can add additional Service Fabric services into the collection. Again, this is all in an effort to help you create the application manifest XML file. There are some other files in here too, like the package root. This is the application manifest, so you could edit this manually if you want to start putting services in here. And there are some other things you can read in the documentation to learn what else is in here that you might want to play with on your own. There is also some application profiles here, or parameters. These are some XML files that contain certain values that you might want to use when you're deploying your application into the cloud, and a different file that is used when you want to deploy it into locally for testing. Right near here, I'll just mention what's here. This is the instance count. So normally when you are deploying things into the cloud, you really want one instance of your service to run on every node that's in the cluster. So to do that, we have this special value here of -1. -1 means deploy this instance on every node in the cluster. But when you are running locally, this is set to 1, which means only run one instance of it. And a lot of times when your service is listening on endpoints, if you try to have multiple instances running on a single machine, which would be the case of one box scenario for testing, if I have this multiple instances running on the same machine and they all want to listen on the same port, the first one grabs the port and the other ones fail. So a lot of times when you're testing locally and you're listening on ports, you want this value set to 1. But when you are running in the cloud, you want it set to -1 because they would each be running on different machines, and on each different machine they can be listening on the same port. We also have a place here for publishing profiles. You might have certain other settings or accounts that you want to use when publishing your application type to the cloud, as opposed to when you're publishing it local. And again, I would encourage you to look through these files to understand more about them and look at the documentation to see what all the various options are. For the most part, when I'm developing applications with Service Fabric, I very rarely even mess with these. The script section here is a PowerShell script that is used by Visual Studio to go and deploy your application into one box or into the cloud. This is also something else that you could look at if you want to understand all the PowerShell commands. These are very similar to the ones I gave in the previous part of the course, where I was demonstrating all of the application lifetime management features that Service Fabric provides. Finally, there's a packages config file. This is just, you know, uses MS Build for Service Fabric. It has some build helpers here, and that's it. So that's our project for the application. Then we have a service. So the service is really where the code goes, and that should be the most interesting part to you. If you look at the properties for this project, right-clicking here and selecting properties, you'll notice it's really just a .NET console application. That's all that a service type is for Service Fabric. It is just a regular standard .NET console application. So everything you know about .NET console applications definitely holds true here. And so if you're familiar with how .NET already works, then you know what the properties folder is about. And this is the regular assembly info file that you would normally see. The references section is also what you would normally see. However, we have taken the liberty of adding some Microsoft Service Fabric specific DLLs as references. These are, of course, contains classes, enumerated types, interfaces, methods, and so on that you could start using from your own code in order to gain these additional features that I've been talking about with your service. Package root is a folder that contains a config section. So this is where you can create a config package that might have some files in it. We give you a settings XML file to get you started, but you can have your own configuration files in here using whatever file format you want, JSON, XML, what have you. And then when your service is up and running on a node, you can go and open these files and read the values out so your service knows how to go and properly configure itself when running on that node. And then there's the service manifest XML file here. We give you an initial one of these, and we populate it with a bunch of information. But mostly, it just has the service type name, which you could change if you'd like. It has the name of the code directory, which you can also change, and what's the name of the executable, and so on. Here's the config package information, and we get you started with an endpoint here as well. These are all things that we've discussed in earlier parts of the course. All right, now we have your standard app config file. This is just a regular .NET thing, nothing specific to Service Fabric. The packages config file, this is a standard NuGet package thing, nothing specific to Service Fabric, except that Service Fabric does make its DLLs available by way of NuGet, and so we see these pre-populated here. Then we get to the three CS files in the project. These are, of course, the C# code files, and this is really the most interesting part. So let's take a look at these in more detail. We'll start with the program CS file. Visual Studio spits out this code for you, where it creates a static program class that has a static main method in it, which again is your normal entry point for a regular .NET console application. Inside main, there's a try block, and inside the try block, there is a call to a data type called service runtime that has a static method on it called register service async. The purpose of this method is to draw a relationship between this string name, stateless one type, and that is the name that's in the manifest file. So again, if we open up the service manifest file, you'll see that the service type name is stateless one type, right? So that's the name of the service type as Service Fabric knows about it. But we want that when we create an instance of that, we want to create an instance of a .NET class object. And so what this method does is it says to Service Fabric, whenever the DevOps person is trying to create a service type called stateless one type, go and execute this code over here, which is a Lambda expression that news up an instance of this class. So we'll have an instance of this class object for each instance of this string type as known by Service Fabric. When this is called, you are passed in some context information. This is some data that Service Fabric knows about you. And then usually you just pass that on to your class. And this stateless one would be your class. The code for that is provided in the stateless one CS file, which we will get to momentarily. Because the main method cannot be marked as an asynchronous method, you cannot await async methods, operation calls, method calls inside here. And therefore, since register service async is an async method, we must call it synchronously. And the proper way to do that is by calling getAwaiter getResult. All right, so now once we have done this registration, Service Fabric now knows that whenever the DevOps person wants to create an instance of this type, it should go and new up an instance of this class. The next thing that happens is we provide a service event source class. Now, this class is in the service event source CS file over here. This class actually has nothing to do with Service Fabric at all. It exists purely as a helper that we provide to you so that you can easily introduce event sourcing into your code. When you call methods on this class, it writes out ETW, or event tracing for Windows records, and those ETW events can be accumulated on a node, and then they can be sent using various technologies, which Service Fabric doesn't have an opinion on. So if you would like to use an Elk stack for this, or you want to use Operation Insights for this, or some other technology for this, that's all fine and good. We don't care. Use whatever you like. But we get you started by giving you this helper class. And then you could add additional methods to this for any additional things you wish to trace in your code. So if we go back to main, we're just simply calling a method here to indicate service type has been registered, and this information would be spit out into the ETW event trace log. The last thing that happens here in the try block is a call to thread.sleepinfinite. This causes your process's primary thread to block forever at this point, and that makes sure that your process doesn't terminate. So the process is going to stay up so that Service Fabric has the ability to create instances or replicas within this process as time goes on. If anything in the try block should happen to fail and throw an exception, there's a catch block down below that will catch any and all exceptions. Once that happens, a ETW event log entry is written out, and then the exception is rethrown. This, of course, would cause the process to terminate in its entirety, but then Service Fabric is monitoring the process. Service Fabric would automatically restart it, and hopefully everything would be running fine. So the last thing for us to talk about is this stateless one class. Let's go to definition of that, and that's in the stateless one CS file. And we'll walk through what we have here. This is actually pretty simple and straightforward. So it's an internal sealed class. You can unseal it if you would like to, but we seal it by default. And it is derived off of our base class called stateless service. Again, if you're going to build a stateful reliable service, we have a different base class here called stateful service, and the rest of this is pretty much the same. There's the constructor here, where we pass into you this stateless service context, and in the stateful world, it would be a stateful service context. And then you would pass it down to the base class constructor, and you can, if you want to, look at that information in this constructor here and save some of that information off for your own use if you need it in your service. You can look at the documentation to see exactly what's provided there. Now there's two virtual methods on the base class that you have the option of overriding. The first method is the run async. Let's look at that one first. So this is called when we want to start your instance running, and you'll notice that we pass into you a cancellation token. It is critically important that you honor the cancellation token. A lot of developers simply ignore it, and that is always the wrong thing to do. When we want your instance to come down, either because we want to move it to another node or because we want to do an upgrade, we want to do a clean. We want to bring you down gracefully or cleanly. And the way that we do that is by signaling this cancellation token. If you ignore the cancellation token in your code, then your instance will not come down, and we cannot move your instance to another node, and we cannot upgrade you. So it is critically important, I cannot stress enough how important it is that you honor this cancellation token. You'll notice that our sample code that we spit out with the Visual Studio template here, we have an infinite loop. And inside the infinite loop, we are looking at the cancellation token to see if we should terminate. You'll also notice that when we do a task delay, because we wait 1 second before looping around, we're also passing the cancellation token in here as well. And if you replace this code with your own code, make sure you propagate that cancellation token throughout your code base. It's very important. Anyway, the run async code is where you would typically put code that you want running over the lifetime of your service. So what's commonly put in here is code that goes and queries a queue to pull messages off the queue and then do some processing. If your service is not set up that way and is only going to do some processing in response to client requests, then you can simply delete this function entirely. It's an override method. So if you delete that method in its entirety, then the base implementation will be the one that actually takes effect, and that one doesn't do anything at all, right? It really just honors a cancellation token, and that's about it. Now, the other part of your service is if it's listening for client requests over the network. We have this other virtual method on the base class, which you can override, and Visual Studio overrides it by default for you. And that method is called create service instance listeners. We call this method on your derive class so that you can give us back a collection of service listener instance objects. Now, by default, what Visual Studio does is it says, well, I'm going to create a collection with zero entries in it and return that back, which means by default, your service is not going to be listening on any endpoints. But you might want to listen on an HTTP endpoint and maybe also on a TCP endpoint and maybe also on a UDP endpoint. That's all up to you. And for every endpoint you want to listen on, you would go and create a new service instance listener, and then you get the full collection of them, and you would return it back from this method. So now when Service Fabric wants to start your instance up and running, it's going to open up each of those listeners that you have returned back and say to all your listeners, I'm now running your instance or replica, and you should open up your listeners and start processing any client requests that come into them. And that's the basic gist of what you get with a reliable service. We have now gone through all the files, so you should have a pretty good understanding of what's here. It's really very simple with a simple base class and a couple of virtual methods. So in the next part of this, we will talk a little bit more about the endpoints because a lot of people use those endpoints. It's a very useful feature of the service, of people's services. And so stay tuned for that.